This morning, we'd like to continue discussing conversations with Nirsakadatta. And the questioner asks him, I hear you making statements about yourself, like I am timeless, immutable, beyond attributes, etc. How do you know these things, and what makes you say them? And he says, I'm only trying to describe the state before I am arises. But the state itself, being beyond the mind and language, is indescribable. As we're going to see, this fact that I am is beyond the mind and language, and so is indescribable, is the key problem in our practice. Our practice is centered on the question, what am I, or what is mo, or what is it? But essentially, it's centered on what is it that transcends all experience. And as language has been designed in order to describe experience, the question of how one can even approach I am is a problem. Let me say this, that you are here to resolve and to demonstrate that resolution of that koan, whatever your koan happens to be. That is the primary function of Doksan, is to give you the opportunity to express the results of your work. However, as we all know, when we're working on Sesshin, the times when we can single-mindedly devote ourselves to the questioning may be rare. Sometimes it's better, sometimes it's worse. At the worst, the mind is just completely shattered, you might say. There's no focal point, there's no way by which we can bring the mind to bear on anything. There's a sense of hopelessness and helplessness that pervades our whole practice. And as we say, this feeling can make up much of a sesshin. But one must not, under any circumstances, believe that struggling within this morass of confusion is a waste of time. And as a consequence, under no circumstances should one sit and wait for better days to arrive. And worst of all, one should certainly not sit and resent the fact that one cannot get deeper into one's practice. You could say that the desert comes because we are self-centered, because we have lived our lives constantly wanting to reaffirm the sense of self. We've constantly wanted to find comfort and peace and security and certainty and all the rest. We've been willing to sacrifice our deeper sensibilities in order to be able to satisfy that craving of the self for affirmation, reassurance, security. And so therefore we've set up within ourselves a set of habit patterns, self-seeking, pleasure-seeking, avoidance of pain methods, with which we have buffered ourselves from what is essential. And so when we come here, and a session is deliberately designed to cut down any possibility of providing you with any kind of entertainment, any kind of distraction, any kind of diversion. You're not even allowed to move in order to satisfy this urge, this restlessness to move. You're facing a wall. It is semi-dark. It is quiet. It's like sense deprivation. And to the degree to which we have had and constructed around us these habits for self-satisfaction, for ego satisfaction, to that extent we are going to pass through hell. In other words, the time that we spend in what you might call the desert is the payment of debts that we have incurred. And if one avoids paying those debts and one seeks to find some way by which one, in spite of it all, can get some sense of self out of it, one is simply building up the debts. Waiting, for example, or resenting, for example, are ways by which we can gain some semblance of self-satisfaction. But we're just incurring more debts. And so therefore, let us say to ourselves, this is enough. Either I'm going to work and see this through, or I'm going to stop. Give it up. It is pointless sitting halfway between two stools. You're either going to commit yourself 100% or just go away. Just pack it up. Leave it. But as we've seen also, not only are we unable to give our attention one-pointedly to the koan, because of the desert, but we also have these emotions that come up. And let's face it, even anxiety is very often better than the desert. But when we get these emotions, then we immediately are trying to find some way by which we can resolve them. We're trying to find what causes them. What can we do about them? How can we suppress them or whatever? And once again, We've spent some considerable time in different teishos and in Doksan saying that what one must do is to be totally present to whatever there is, whether it is the desert or whether it is an emotion. And by doing this, there is some sense of, I'm not that. It's not a separation so much as a discernment. There is a discerning quality. And one sees that although it seems to be a unified whole, nevertheless, at some level, there is the perception that it is dependent on my knowing it. But we must understand that when we're working like this, we are, so to say, tilling the ground so that the seed of the koan can be attended to. This is very essential work, to work with the dryness and to work with the emotions, with the pain. This is very essential. But we must not look in any way upon that as the real essence of the practice. This is not a psychological group. We work on these various, what you might call obstacles, in order to be able to get through to the koan. Let us not be distracted in any way from that truth. The only ultimate resolution of the debt that you have incurred through selfishness and the conflicts that generate these negative emotions, the only way is to get beyond them, to realize your true home, to realize what you are fundamentally. We do not resolve our problems. We step outside them. And the questioner goes on and says, the I am is the foundation of all experience. That is it. Keep this firmly in mind, that without being, without your being, there is nothing. And of course, you could put it another way, because you are, everything else is. And somehow, when you're working on who am I, or what am I, or what is mu, or what is it, somehow you're going to make that truth your own. That is what it's about. Once you see that you are the foundation of all, then all that arises loses any kind of power that it presently has over you. See this. This is the most wonderful news that you could possibly have. Don't throw it away. This is what you're working for and with. But the questioner goes on and says, what you are trying to describe must also be an experience. He's saying, I am is another experience. And, of course, for many people, this is true. For many people, they know I am. And, as far as they're concerned, that is completely satisfactory. And when they come to demonstrate the Kohen, they start knowing I am and trying to show how their demonstration shows that they know I am. But as we will see, this is not the case with one who has transcended. This is not an experience. You are not an experience. I am is not an experience. And this means, of course, that anything that you can experience, no matter how sublime, no matter how ineffable, no matter how subtle and beautiful, if you can experience it, it is not you. And this is so important because people come in and talk about, they can feel this vast space all around them, they say, and they feel that they are now describing some kind of awakened state. Or they come in and say they had this most ineffable feeling, it was most beautiful feeling. And there's nothing wrong with saying this and certainly bring this kind of thing into the Dr. Sun room. This is perfectly all right. But if you can feel it, if you can experience it, if you can know it, it is not you. It is not, this is not a demonstration of the truth that you are home. So, but anyway, he's saying this must be an experience, limited and transitory. And then he goes on and says, you speak of yourself as immutable. I hear the sound of the word, I remember its dictionary meaning, but the experience of being immutable I do not have. How can I break through the barrier and know personally, intimately, what it means to be immutable? Now we can translate that into our practice. And you hear the truth, I am. And you know the sound of the words, I am. You know the dictionary meaning. But what it really means, I am, I don't really know. How can I break through the barrier and know personally, intimately, what I am means? That is a way of putting what the questioner is asking. So we're saying, you are the ground of all experience. First there is I am, and then there is the rest. Now what does that mean? And when you're asking, what am I, or what is mu, or what is it, whatever it means, this is what you're asking. What does it mean? What is this transcendent? What is this beyond all experience? What is it? And if you've got the word it, or you've got the word mu, or you've got the word I am, then you can translate it into that idiom. But we're going to work with I am. What does I am mean? And we know, this is what I emphasize, you know what it means. You are what it means. But nevertheless, you do not know what it means. Or the knowing that you feel that you have is not the real knowing that you do have. And so how are we going to break this trap, this barrier? How are we going to break through this? How are we going to make this something that is not simply a package of words that are being bandied around? How can we make it into something that is real and true for me? This is your question. This is what you must be demanding. And we often say, don't be satisfied with anything less than the reality and truth of what I am means. Anything else is just so much garbage, just so much unnecessary baggage that you could carry around. It all comes down to this, just that one question. And everything now, if you can only see it, should be devoted to that end. What does it mean, I am? And Nyasagadatta says, the words themselves are the bridge. I am, that is the bridge. And what does that mean? You see, I want to talk about chair. And so I use the word chair to you. I say, would you be good enough to bring the chair here, please? And you go over and you pick up the chair and you bring it. Because I've used the chair as a bridge, as a way of indicating something. I'm saying, I want that. But now when we come to I am, what is it indicating? There's nothing substantial that it is indicating. There's nothing objective relating to it. And when we get something like that, like the word unicorn, for example, there is nothing that corresponds to unicorn, really. We can imagine it, we can picture it, we can paint it and so on, but that's not really a unicorn. That's a painting, a picture and so on of a unicorn. Whereas a chair, when you pick up a chair and bring it here, that's not a painting or a picture or an image of a chair. And is the question, is I am therefore of that kind, a kind of unicorn? And no, I mean, one feels it. When one says, I am tired, I am hungry, I am happy, I am going out, one is saying something which is very real. There's not just simply using words in a sort of fanciful way. One is saying something very definite. I am going out. I am hungry. I am tired. And you must see this when you're working on the koan I am. You must see this. Or if you're working on what is it, you say, it is raining. It is time we left. It is sad. It, constantly, you're using that word and you use it in a very real way. When you come to mu, it's slightly different because one has to recognize that mu means no. Does the dog have a Buddha nature? No. But you do know that at least a monk would know, and you should know by now, having chanted Hakuin Zenji's chant in praise of Zazen the number of times that you have, that all beings are Buddha, including the dog. And so therefore you're thrust into the question, what kind of no is this? But you're still working with no. You're still working with that negation. No. What is being negated? And if you get into kind of philosophical thoughts and so on about this, you're just wasting your time. What is Joshu's mu? What is Joshu's no? You have to be Joshu. What are you saying when you say mu or no? What kind of bridge is I am? And it's very interesting because we talk about knowing being. And that is really I am. I is knowing. The essence of I is knowing. And yet it is knowing which is its own being. This is what I am is saying. So what are we talking about then? And this is where you're going to have the difficulty. Because what you're asking about is what is asking. That which is asking is being asked about. If I ask about a chair, what is a chair? The chair is not asking, I am. what is a chair, or what is a car, or what is a house? But when I ask, what am I? There's a loop there. And unless you get that loop, you're looking upon the question in the same way that you look upon what is a chair or what is a house or what is an atom or whatever it might be. And what is more, this is the only time this kind of loop comes into a question. This is why we try to say to you constantly, this is not your ordinary question. Be careful. This is a trap. The trap is that it suggests that you can ask, what am I, in the same way that you can ask, what is a chair, but you cannot. And unless you get that loop, that feedback, that whatever you're going to call it, that ambiguity, dilemma, whatever you might want to call it, doesn't matter what you call it, don't call it anything, just see it, just know it is there. You're asking and you're being asked about, but it is you that is asking about it. But even so, Nirsagadatta says, remember it, think of it, explore it, go around it, look at it from all directions. And this is it. Now you have to start working with this. What is it? What is knowing? And again, you've got this knowing is asking and it is being asked about. And so you're wrapped up in this. There is, you're locked in a, if you really get into this, you're locked into sort of the ultimate bind. Hakuin says it's like a rat in a bamboo tube. It cannot go forward because one can't answer it. One cannot go back because one has to answer it. If this is the basis of all, and really one has suffered enough, one has said that this way of life, living through misery after misery after misery, is enough. I'm not going to do it anymore. I've got to find out what it's all based on. And so therefore you cannot pull back. You cannot go forward, but you cannot pull back. And you certainly can't stay where you are because it's so damned uncomfortable. And as I say, you cannot thrust yourself into this kind of double bind by decision. It means that you have to patiently, very subtly, very penetratingly, penetrate into the kind of question that you are asking here with the koan, with all koans actually, but with this koan, what am I? Unless you see this, then you're just hammering away, just bashing away, what am I, what am I, what am I, what am I, hoping for the best, fearing the worst. So how do you get into, you see, you want to find out what does it mean to know, but you know. It's already given. You don't have to find out what it means to know. And yet, what does it mean to know? Let me say again that when you penetrate through to the koan, what am I? You won't be able to turn around and say, ah, now I know at last what I am. You won't be able to say that. But what will happen is the whole thing will break open. It may actually break open with an explosion. The whole thing just drops away all of a sudden. It's like when you've got a problem and you work with it, you work with it, you work with it, and you say, oh, I got it, I got it, I got it, I got it. But then you can say what you've got. You can give the what the problem's about. But at the initial point, when you say, I've got it, you cannot. And like this, after you've sort of, you can then start working out what it means and so on for yourself and building up some understanding around it, which is all right. But initially, you see, if you work with the assumption that I've got to come up with the answer, then of course you've got the whole attitude is skewed wrong. You're pointing your cart south, as we say. You're not coming up with an answer. You are getting that question so that it becomes deeper and deeper and deeper until it blows up from its own internal inconsistency. But you can only do that, as we say, it is not any kind of self-conscious, self-willed effort. When you really get into it, the amount of tension that builds up is absolutely enormous. The enormous power can be generated in getting this, when you get this really in perspective. It's terrifying, the amount of power that can be generated with this question. But obviously, if you set out to generate this kind of power, then you're just going to be puffing and blowing like a bullfrog. It is subtle, and it comes of itself. It's like if you've got any question, when you first get it, you can get a hunch there's something here. But then as you sort of explore that hunch, then it starts getting tighter, and then you're in the grip of it. And you can't leave it. It's like someone asked Newton, how did you come up with the laws of motion or whatever it was? And he said, I never thought of anything else. He was just taken over by it. And one can get into that kind of situation in ordinary life, over problems of life. But this, as I say, is a particular kind of problem. It is not the kind of problem that you meet up with in life. So again, what does it mean, I am? What are you saying when you say I am? What does it mean to be? What is that? What does it mean? Is. It is. What does it mean? And you'll leave behind the words. As long as you stay with words, then you'll never get there. You'll just be feeling your way into what it is about. And you can do it. When it's described, it sounds very formidable, but it isn't really. It's provided you've got the patience. First of all, you had the patience to work through the dryness, the deadness, the pointlessness, the desert. You had the willingness, the patience to work through that. You're not held back now by your emotions. There's a certain clarity that comes about. And now it is possible, very gently, to direct the mind to this question, what am I? It's possible that, and it may take several days, perhaps most of the session, before you can get there. But never mind, that's not the point. You can break this open in a moment, or you can break this open after years of practice. It doesn't matter. But this is the direction you're going, that you're caught up in it. You cannot help. There's a twist in it, and the more that you work with it, the tighter the twist becomes. And so, therefore, the more power that is generated within that twist. He says, endure all delays and disappointments. And the disappointments are the inability, the frustration. I can't get it. It doesn't work. I don't know what he's talking about. I don't know how to do this. All of this, one goes through this. time and again. It doesn't really make any sense. What can I do? How can I do this? What shall I do? This is the disappointment, and this is why he says, dive in with earnest perseverance. One says, well, never mind. Somehow or another, it can be done. And he says, till suddenly the mind turns around, away from the words, towards the reality beyond the word. That's why I say, you do not come up with the answer, but you are now within the total meaning of I am. You are now the fullest expression I am. This is what I am means. He says, it is like trying to find a person knowing his name only. A day comes when your inquiries will bring you to that person and the name becomes reality. This is it. As long as you're satisfied with knowing just that sort of consciousness of, or knowing in the sort of the verbal, intellectual way, or even intuitive way, what I am means, as long as you're satisfied with that, none of this will make any sense. But once you can feel there is something beyond, I know there is something beyond, that is the hunch, that is the taste. And many of you have reported to me in the Dr. Sun room that you've had these moments in your life and during sessions, when it's become, yes, there is, he's right, there is something there. And it's working with that hunch. It's allowing that hunch to grow in you. It starts off very faintly. It's just sometimes almost just a wish or a hope. But never mind. To take whatever, in whatever form it's given, don't be greedy. Allow it to grow within you. And it will, if you have the confidence, if you have the patience, and if you have the courage. He said, words are valuable because between the word and meaning there is a link. And if one investigates the word assiduously, one crosses beyond the concept into the experience at the root of it. And this is why I say, we say I am repeatedly during the day. Constantly we use the word I and the word I am. And so therefore, the word does have meaning. But the problem is, when you are asked, what is I, or what does the I am mean? You turn around and you say, well, I'm the body, or I'm the spirit, or I'm the soul, or I am... Because one is taken up with experience and fascinated by experience, and so therefore one necessarily feels that this I is just is another kind of experience. It's something that I can know about, and so let me say it's the body. So I can know about the body, or, well, the mind. I think I know what the mind is. I'm the mind, or whatever. And so in other words, One misunderstands, one is misguided, one has got into wrong kind of thinking habit patterns. One is attributing I am to something which it is not. And this is, what is meant by ignorance. But let me say again, you know, when you say I am going out, there is a real truth embedded in that. A very real truth embedded in that. And now the question is, what is that truth that is embedded in there? And so therefore, when you are working on it, you would say, I am. Try to get the feel when you say, I am. What is behind that? First of all, get the feeling. What do you feel there? I am is not a feeling, it's beyond a feeling, but never mind. It's a way of levering yourself into the question. He says, as a matter of fact, such repeated attempts to go beyond words is called meditation. And there we are. This is the flower of your practice. The stalk and these roots and so on are in this other kind of work that you do, following the breath, allowing, and all of that. This is enabling the question, the koan, to find a certain kind of maturity in you. But as we say, it is that which is the real point of your practice. He says, practice is but a persistent attempt to cross over from the verbal to the non-verbal. I would put it quite slightly differently from that, and say that practice is but a persistent attempt to cross over from experience to what is beyond all experience. We're not simply bound up in words, although words fix experience in a way which makes it even more intractable. But it is that a fascination with experience, and as we were saying the other day, with the content of experience. We think the content of the experience is what is vital, but it isn't. Is what transcends experience and makes experience possible, which is vital. And that is what you're trying to discern with your questioning. He says the task seems hopeless, and it does. It does, it does, it does. It does. And how what people have the courage to keep going is also its own kind of mystery. But as I say, one is driven. One can no longer cover up and pretend that everything is, life is roses, roses. At last one realises, no, this is silly. I mean, I get up in the morning, I'm tired, before I get out of bed, I'm anxious, I go through the thing, everything is a burden. I try to do my best and nobody accepts my best. I'm frustrated. I'm humiliated constantly. And then I go to bed. And it's time to do something else. There must be. And then how many different ways, different religions are there that are affirming constantly you're not simply the body? There is a transcendent. Much of it is all garbage. Much of it has got all mixed up with people's wishes and beliefs and hopes and so on. But nevertheless, the fact it is so widespread and it has such a grip on so many different people over so many years, thousands of years, nevertheless must tell us this is true in some way, and I'm going to find what that truth is, whatever. That truth is my truth. The task seems hopeless until suddenly all becomes clear and simple and so wonderfully easy. It is. It is. You put down a burden. It's easy. But as long as you're interested in your present way of living, you will shirk from the final leap into the unknown. And this is the problem. Again, people ask me, why is it takes me so long to come to awakening? I've practiced for years. Why is it taken me so long? And obviously the answer is something else is more important. And if it is more important, that is you to say. There's no reason why one should say that breaking through this barrier, getting out of this veil of misery, has to be done. There's no reason to say that. No. If one wants to stay with life as it is, one should, under no circumstances, try to persuade a person that they shouldn't, that they should practice Zen or they should work on themselves or something like that. One mustn't do that. You can offer it to people, and if they then seem interested, one can show them how to get more information or whatever. But under no circumstances try to persuade anyone to take up Zen, and that includes people in your family. Another questioner asks, why should the unknown interest me? Of what use is the unknown? Well, let's use transcendent. Why should the transcendent be of interest? And what use is it to awaken to the transcendent? And Nirsagadatta says rightly, of no use whatsoever. If you feel that this is going to make you wiser, or a better person, or more popular, or more powerful, or a great super being, or something like that, then of course that is going to be the main barrier on the way. But I can assure you that it does not do any of that. It has no use whatsoever in the world. And if you like it, you could go out and tell people walking along the street and say, I'm trying to get awakened, and see how fascinated they are by that truth. But he says, but it is worthwhile to know what keeps you within the narrow confines of the known. You see, it is as well, once you have the taste for it, so you can really see what is the pain of life. And the pain of life is one is trying to find the transcendent within experience. One is trying to find that which is real in the unreal, that which is true in the illusory. This is the tragedy. And when one really works on oneself, even whatever, awakening or no awakening, one begins to realize that there is a truth here which is beyond experience. And so therefore the tendency to try to force experience to correspond to what one, I was going to say intuitively, but it's beyond that, knows is the case. One knows the truth. One is the truth. And one is trying to make reality, experience rather, correspond to that. This is why we're trying to be unique in the world. We're trying to be a special person in the world because we are very, very special. But not special in terms of any kind of form, but we want it in a form. We want it in an experience. We want something we can grasp. And this is the basis, as we say, of the pain of life. The pain of life is that we know, but we cannot realize. And this leads people to drink and to profligacy and all kinds, gambling, all kinds of disastrous behavior, because they are driven by the truth. And furthermore, as he says, it is the full and correct knowledge of the known that takes you to the unknown. You get to know the limitations of what the known can do. The known cannot give you happiness. It can give you pleasure, it can give you a certain amount of peace, it can give you, but it cannot give you that which above all you're seeking. And once one gets to see that truly, then one cannot help but go to the transcendent. He says, you cannot think of it in terms of uses and advantages. To be quite detached, beyond the reach of all self-concerned, all selfish self-consideration, is an inescapable condition of liberation. You may call it death. It's the end of all the search for pleasure and so on. And he says, you may call it death, but to me, it is living at its most meaningful and intense, for I am one with life in its totality and fullness, intensity, meaningfulness, harmony. What more do you want?
Les quatre vœux.
Tous les êtres innombrables, je fais le
vœu de libérer les passions aveuglées sans fin. Je fais le vœu de vaincre les barrières infinies du dharma. Je fais le vœu de franchir la grande voie du Bouddha. Je fais le vœu de l'atteindre tous les êtres innombrables, je fais le vœu de libérer les passions aveuglées sans fin. Je fais le vœu de vaincre les barrières infinies du dharma. Je fais le vœu de franchir la grande voie du Bouddha. Je fais le vœu de l'atteindre tous les êtres innombrables, je fais le vœu de libérer les passions aveuglées sans fin. Je fais le vœu de vaincre les barrières infinies du dharma. Je fais le vœu de franchir la grande voie du Bouddha. Je fais le vœu de l'atteindre